The Calloway and Grant families became close friends over the years, so George watched Elizabeth grow up, change from a pestering little girl to a shy 11-year-old, then a young woman of 16. Most girls of 16 had jumped the broom and were already producing more slaves for their masters. But Elizabeth's father, Nat, had not allowed her to see any man, and Captain Will Grant hadn't interfered. When Nat heard the call to become a Methodist minister, George and Ma started going to his colored church on the corner of Grant's farm. George didn't know when he started loving Elizabeth. One day in church, he was staring at her, and it just came on him. From that day, he couldn't help himself, and he sure didn't know what to say to her. Ma told him to just walk up and talk to the girl.
"You's knowed her for 10 year. She growed up, but she's still the same as she was. Peoples don't change, George."
George didn't believe a word of it. She didn't look or act the same. Elizabeth was strong and slender, smiled politely and kept her hands still in her lap. Not the Tom girl he'd played with. No more running, rock throwing, or silly songs. Not silly at all. Like most things to do with the heart, the women took charge. That next Sunday out in the churchyard with the entire congregation watching, at least it seemed that way to George, Elizabeth left her mother's side, walked right up to George and asked him if he knew how old she was. He said he did. 16-year-old.
"You know that's marrying age."
George nodded. "And then some." It hadn't been a hot day until that moment. George could barely breathe. His face felt warm, his hands moist. George's mind went blank. Elizabeth's mother, Caroline, and Ma, who had been chatting at a distance, turned and looked at them. Elizabeth stood and looked him straight in the eye, held her ground.
I'm wondering."
George was wondering what to say next.
"Yes, I will," she said.
"What?" he said.
"Marry you."
She smiled. George's knees nearly betrayed him. He put a steadying hand on the tree next to him. Over her shoulder, he could see the two women watching.
"You're gonna have to kiss me sooner or later, George. Might as well be now."
George hugged her, lifted her off the ground, kissed her. He could see his mother smile. Her father appeared from around the other side of the tree. He'd been watching, too.
"That'll do, George," Nat continued as George put her down. "You're gonna have to have a scripture wedding in this here church, and get permission to Marcy Tom, you know."
He did know. Everything George did was with the permission of, knowledge of, or orders of Marcy Tom. In this, his life was no different than any slave. Marcy Tom was 6 feet tall, handsome, blondish hair, with the same blue eyes as George. Sure of himself, always polite, Marcy Tom worked hard and pretty much got what he wanted. He was a busy man, what with the bank, railroad, and mines he owned, to say nothing of his farms and land. He was a wealthy man. In 1838, the Bradley County lands sold to the first settlers for $7.50 an acre. Every 2 months, the land price was reduced, a little at a time, until the farmland was sold off. Marcy Tom, with a partner, Euclid Waterhouse, bought up most of the county's unsold remainder land for a penny an acre from the government. Much of it was near a place called Ducktown. Rough, scraggy mountains, not fit for farming. It had little value for timber, either. Turned out it was full of copper, lead, and silver. But to get the valuable metals to market, Marcy Tom needed heavy transportation. So he built the East Tennessee Railroad. Then he needed a bank to put the money in. So he opened the Ocoee Bank in July 1854, of which he was president, capitalized at $100,000.